Welcome back to this special edition of Primetime Radio called Voices of Katrina. We're talking with older Gulf Coast residents about their lives in the wake of the hurricane. Fewer than half of New Orleanians over 55 have returned. Some are scared to, some can't afford to, and many have health issues that can't be treated in a city that still doesn't have all its traffic lights up and running, much less its hospitals. The government's response continues to frustrate many trying to return. Out of 138,000 people who applied for road home funds after the storms, only about 30,000 had received any money as of early summer 2007. In this segment, writer Barry Yeoman continues his conversations with survivors. Conversations about loss and hope 2 years after Katrina.
We need to go back home.
I won't leave this area.
There's nothing more we'd like to do.
My family's here.
This waiting, you cry every day.
What is my next step?
You just kind of lose your drive.
What is my next step?
Seventy-five-year-old Althea Washington lived her entire life in New Orleans until Hurricane Katrina hit. Her husband, Bertrand, died in a suburban nursing home during the flooding. I visited with Washington at Sun East, a retirement community just outside Houston where many New Orleanians found themselves after the storm. The phone rang in Washington's small, modern apartment a few times each hour. Washington's friends and relatives were calling to see how things were going, just checking in. She's doing just fine, she tells them. Same thing she tells her new neighbors at Sun East when she sees them in the halls.
I will give you the biggest old smile and the biggest old hello that I can muster at the time that I see you. When I don't do it, that's because I've got things on my mind. And I don't know which way to go, which way to turn, which move to make.
Washington has been stuck in limbo without sufficient money to move back home. Her insurance company has denied her entire homeowner's claim, saying the policy specifically excluded hurricane damage. Sometimes she wonders if she even wants to return home, given the city's crime rate and the possibility that another storm might hit. The one thing that keeps her centered is her faith.
For some reason, God let me wake up this morning, so I seek him. In the rising of the sun, in the going down of the same, here I am.
All over New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, lost communities are trying to rebuild. Anthony and Ruth Haas got married in 1958, and in 1969, they moved to their house in the Lakeview neighborhood.
They had little grocery stores, or they had medium-sized grocery stores, but mostly little ones. They had drug stores, they had a lot of banks, an old-time neighborhood. You felt safe. It was just a delightful place to live. Like in our own little world up in here.
The Haases lived in a house built in the 1920s, and they'd been fixing it up since they bought it almost 40 years ago.
Our whole thing was not take a vacation, but lay a brick driveway, or, you know, that's the way we lived. My husband laid down the oak strip floors. We even changed the floor plan in it, you know, because it was like a double shotgun. We framed in a hall. We just made, it was a constant love of this house that kept us working on it. And when we reached 70, we just were like finished, you know, so we just thought we were set for life.
When the floodwaters subsided, that dream house was barely a shell. The Haases were in the middle of pulling their destroyed furniture out to the street when Anthony took a rare break to grab some water.
He's sitting there and a truck pulls up and these kids say to him, "Can I help you?" And he said, "Can you help me?" And they said, "Yes, can we help you? And how many of us do you want?" And they just came in and took over and just took all that stuff out. They went and got their own backhoe, and they backhoed everything out to the street. They came the next day and brought a sheetrock. It's laying on the floor. Their mission was to get us a place to live. But besides helping us, because we're elderly, you know, and it's, but we would have done it, but they just did it so willingly, you know, and they were, I called them my little angels, because they were so uplifting mentally, besides physically helping us. They gave us hope, you know. It was very rewarding when they were here to know people like that existed, that cared.
Thousands of angels came from all over the country to lend countless hours to the cleanup effort. But for those struggling to find their way immediately after the storm, it was often smaller things that made the difference. John and Avis Switzer evacuated their home in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, and sought refuge with friends in Georgia. But their adult children stayed behind. When the Switzers saw the devastation on TV, they thought their kids might not have made it. The couple had to get back. When the highway patrol told them they couldn't drive into the disaster zone, they headed home anyway, taking back roads to avoid the washed-out interstates.
We were coming down through North Mississippi and came down Highway 57, and we stopped at a place up there. We had to go to the bathroom. And they said, well, we got no electricity and it's dark, but if you don't mind propping the door open a little bit so you'll have some light to see what you're doing, go ahead. So we went to the bathroom, and we came out, and there was a gentleman there wearing a gun. And it turns out that he was an ATF agent. And he stopped us, and he said, look, I've just come back from down on the coast. He said, there's looting going on, there's hijacking going on. And if you drive in there and don't get there before dark, you're liable to be hijacked in the road, have your car stolen, and God knows what happened to you. He said, do you have a gun? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, whatever you do, make sure you get in before dark. So that scared the dickens out of both of us. But we didn't have any choice. We had no place to stay, and to keep the car running, I had to stop every now and then and pour gasoline into the gas tanks. We stopped, I think, 3 times. And every time we stopped, invariably, they'd see me out fooling with the car, either putting gas in or the trailer or something, and they would stop and say, do you need help?
Young men in pickups and or just anybody who was passing. Mm.
People like that are the kind of people we have here in the South. People that stop to help us on the side of the highway. Those kind of people.
The Switzers got back to Mississippi and found their kids. They were okay. The compassion of those who helped them is a big part of why the Switzers decided to rebuild again. They lost their first home to Hurricane Camille in 1969. John Switzer jokes that Boulder, Colorado is a nice dry town, but his wife will have none of it. She won't live anywhere else. The Gulf, she says, is home. That stubbornness is sometimes the only hope for rebirth, especially in places that appear abandoned by the government. Shirley Thomas, the grandmother who pushed the drug dealers off her front porch, returned to the 7th Ward of New Orleans on October 5, 2005, as soon as she was allowed back. Thomas found her neighborhood almost completely empty.
You could see the debris where the trees and stuff had been, you know. Physically, all my pretty garden, everything was dead. Everything was dead. And at nighttime, my brother, when he came down from Maryland, we went did a little night run, and it was real eerie feeling. Just darkness all over everywhere. And the headlights from the car is all you saw.
And the house she spent 3 years fixing faced the same fate as did so many flooded homes.
When I got in the house, this yucky stuff all over the floor, this black slimy stuff all over the floor. I could see the watermark midway in my washer and dryer. The only thing that was functional in the house was the bathroom. We had a working toilet that we could use while we were, you know, we didn't have hot water, but we had running water and working toilet. So that was great.
Shirley Thomas took that one blessing and did what she had always done. She got to work.
I knew I was going to stay there and do what I had to do to get my property back in living condition. Nobody can tell me otherwise.
You're listening to Primetime Radio. I'm Barry Yeoman. In this special edition, people from the Gulf Coast share their deeply personal stories about life before and after the hurricane. They're voices you don't hear every day on the radio. They're voices of Katrina. Pat and Leonard Johnson were so eager to get back to New Orleans, they moved into a FEMA trailer parked in front of their house a month before the electricity and water were hooked up. But things haven't gone well for them. A contractor scammed them out of tens of thousands of dollars. The small amount of money they received from insurance ran out before they finished rebuilding. They have multiple medical conditions. Both are overweight and struggle with diabetes, and Pat has a weak heart and bad knees. After Katrina, their medical records were lost, and it took more than a year to find a new regular doctor. Their physical conditions are only getting worse from the stress and from constant exposure to mildew and mold.
When our kids come around, they don't know what's going on. We don't tell them, well, oh, Mama sure feel bad today. Why? Why should I tell them I feel bad? They call you on the phone, and my kids call me almost every day. Hey, Mom, what you doing? How you feel? Oh, baby, I'm fine. But how the house coming? I say it's coming along fine. They're already upset because I'm here. They can't get here and do nothing for me because they can't do their own stuff. I'm a retired nurse. I used to hate it when people did it to me. We had, you know how you have your chronic complainers and then you have your complainers? I don't want to be labeled as eat, neither one of them. You know, you come around me. Who wants their grandma to always be complaining? Grandma's supposed to be what's happening. Grandma's supposed to be popping. Grandma's supposed to be on top of everything. Well, you know what I'm saying. Grandmas and grandpas are supposed to be special people.
Right.
They're not supposed to be these old fogies that sit around and don't have no bounce in their step. I don't have no bounce, but my grandchildren will never know her.
The Johnsons don't want to show weakness, and they don't want to give up, but the daily pressure of living in their tiny trailer while their money and health problems mounted, it was just so hard.
I worked overtime, around time, at any time to buy this house. The thing is, this was supposed to be something special when I bought it. This was supposed to be the family house. This is where, when times get bad for you, you're supposed to have somewhere where you can lay your head, even if you got to sleep on the floor. At least you feel safe, and you have somewhere to stay. You got food to eat, and you know there's nothing but pure love here. That's all I preach to my children all their lives. If we can't get this house up and rolling, that's gone.
When I caught up with Pat Johnson recently, she and Leonard were finally planning to move back into their house. They had reluctantly accepted money from Pat's daughter to complete the job. But the medical problems persisted, and so did the couple's depression. Moving back home isn't even an option for many New Orleanians. Julie Neville now lives near Houston at Sun East Homes. She's a neighbor there of Althea Washington and often brings Washington a warm plate of food from her kitchen. Neville has multiple sclerosis and evacuated during the storm. She went back to New Orleans that first October to check on her house, but not before getting a warning from her daughter.
I remember my baby girl telling me, she said, you know, Mother, Trinity, who's her daughter, was starting a new school. And she said, I know you're starting a new school, and Mama wants you to be a butterfly. She said, I want you to be able to smile and fly and not cry. And when I got ready to go see my house, she called me that morning and she said, Mama, I'm gonna tell you like I told Trinity. I want you to be a butterfly, and I want you to fly and not cry. She had seen the house before I did. And I told her, I said, okay, I'm not going to cry. And when I saw my house, I wanted to cry. I really did. And I wanted to cry because of all the memories that was just stored up, not just in that house, but in that yard. in that yard. And it was all gone. It was all gone. You know, I mean, the memories will never leave me. But the house with all my precious pictures, letters, cards, certificates from when my children were small, all that's gone, you know. My daddy's flag, my grandfather's flag that I got from when they died, you know, the veteran hospital gave me their flags, gone.
Neville's children want her to come stay with them, but she's determined to be on her own. Even if it's nothing more than a kitchen, a bedroom, and a bath, she says, let it be yours. Neville's not sure it will last, though. A local church in Houston stepped in to cover her back rent after FEMA cut her off. After countless calls and faxes, she's now qualified for new FEMA rental assistance through the summer. But after that, who knows? One way or another, Neville suspects she'll stay in Texas, where most of her children now live. Housing is still scarce in New Orleans, as are some vital medical services. Supermarkets remain shuttered, and life is hard for anyone who isn't both affluent and able-bodied.
We need to go back home. There's nothing more we'd like to do. But there's nowhere in Louisiana for us, okay? But we have learned, since I've been here at Sun East, we live as a community. And this is the way we lived in New Orleans. That's the way people from New Orleans are. They look out for one another.
You're listening to a special edition of Prime Time Radio. Writer Barry Yeoman spent several weeks with some of the older people on the Gulf Coast who continue to suffer disproportionately from the effects of Hurricane Katrina. This is his report.
Some communities look out for one another better than others. In New Orleans East, the three pastors at Mary Queen of Vietnam Catholic Church returned home early. They badgered the city for electricity and set up a nightly dinner buffet for returning homeowners. They also began mapping out a long-term recovery strategy, including a 300-unit senior housing complex. That eased the way for some 80% of the church's parishioners to come home and offer one another shelter as they built back. And in other communities, rebuilding starts with one person, a person like Shirley Thomas. She's been working on her house and yard so much that her kids started buying her gift cards to Lowe's. Almost 2 years after the flooding, a dead tree still stands in Thomas's yard. But Thomas doesn't mind so much. The trunk is now covered over with vibrant pink flowers. A climbing vine has claimed it as its home. Thomas isn't finished fixing things up yet, but people see her putting in the work every day, often with her family's help.
I was just stooping over, put my new flowers, and a man that was walking his dog, I saw him on the other side of the street. He was just standing there with the dog, looking at the flowers. He said, Mr. Flowers, so he said, I think that's what I'm going to go home and do. Mm-hmm. Something simple as flowers, you know. There was hope. It's not the end of the world, you know. They had debris everywhere and this and that, and people gutting. But there were my pretty flowers.
Thomas's community is slowly coming back. Her neighbors across the street are rebuilding. So are others up and down the block. Thomas knows she'll have to be vigilant to keep the drug dealers from returning, so she's back to keeping an eye on the street.
My mission is to be on that front porch, right on that front porch. I can see myself just growing as an older lady, older than what I am right now. and talk to these young people that's passing, because my grandmother was like that. She would sit on her porch, and everybody would say, hey, Miss Price, and they would just talk to this old lady, and she could talk to anybody about anything, and that's basically the way I am, you know. Mm-hmm. So my mission is right on this corner, right here. This is it.
But how to go about moving forward isn't so clear for all Katrina survivors. For Althea Washington, memories of life before are easier to think about.
The French bread that I love, with a big glass of real milk and butter on it. And if you do like we did as children, you dip it in the milk and you just soak it up. That's how good New Orleans loves their French bread, their coffee, their milk. Their po' boy sandwiches, their gumbos.
my choir rehearsals, my staying in church for two services, my checking on my children and my husband. That's my life.
That was her life. But since losing her husband and her home, she finds herself lost. She comes back to her Houston apartment each day, sitting in her favorite chair, often falling asleep sitting upright as she waits for the next day to begin.
It's an empty life. It's a lonesome life. I don't cook like I used to. Of course, there's nobody here for me to cook for. Since I've been up here, I have not put my membership anywhere. I sing from the pews. I've been invited to join their choirs. But I haven't been able to do it.
Why not?
I don't know. I guess I do know, but I don't want to admit that I know. Change. Though we know change is inevitable, it will cause me to have to admit that there are things that I cannot go back to, that I'll never be able to go back to.
Now hear me while I pray. Take all my sins away. Oh, let me from this day be holy thine.
Almost 2 years after Katrina ravaged the Gulf Coast and put New Orleans underwater, it's still hard to understand. It's hard to imagine the magnitude of the physical destruction and the emotional anguish felt by survivors as they try to find some sense of normalcy. The thing about the dozens of people I talked with from New Orleans is that they ache for their city. As poverty-stricken and crime-ridden as it was and is, they ache for it. They yearn for that sense of rootedness, that sense of home, that many of us can't understand, but for them is what living in New Orleans was all about. For those who will never return, we can only hope they're able to bring that sense of home with them, wherever they end up. I'm Barry Yeoman.
Thanks for listening to this special edition of Primetime Radio. For more on this story, including video and photographs, visit us on the web at aarpmagazine.org/Katrina. You can find information about our weekly radio program at radioprimetime.org. This program was produced by Rachel McCarthy, executive producer Janelle Haskell, associate producer Angel Todd. Our engineer is Bruce Youngblood. Original music composed by Bart Ramsey. Production help from Steve Mencher. Special thanks to Karen Reyes at AARP The Magazine for her help on this project. I'm Mike Cuthbert in Washington.